Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Steve Weich from the NFL Network. He was out at the Cardinals yesterday, as was Eric, as was I. I loved how when Steve Keim walked in, there was just kind of this air of, okay, we're going to get a whole lot of nothing for 20 minutes around the draft. It's that time of year. I'm not being critical of Steve. We all know what that one press conference every year is probably the most painful because we want to give information to you. We'd like to learn a little bit. But as I was told once from people within the Cardinals organization, Michael Bidwell pays Steve Keim. He doesn't pay Brad Sessmatt. Okay. And so that means don't say anything. And that's what we went through yesterday. Although there's some stuff around the draft that we'll get through with Steve. Baker Mayfield was at the Cardinals yesterday. Steve Weich. Steve's been following Baker. Is that right, Eric? Is that the whole intent?
No, he hasn't been following him. He just knows some things that weren't discussed yesterday.
He knows some things.
The media availability. That's
pretty
all.
Cryptic. Is this good stuff?
Well, I saw him on the NFL Network. Like, we were sitting next to each other in the media room working yesterday, and he's like, oh, excuse me. And he went back into this little room that the Cardinals have that's set up for the NFL Network.
Right, little flash cam.
Yeah, and I'm watching him on the TV, and he's talking about Baker Mayfield, and I was like, oh, clearly you've talked to someone inside the organization because that wasn't discussed at the press conference about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, that's...
And he's in Oakland today, so...
He's up at the Raiders.
Yeah.
That's an adventure in its own right.
But a really good guy. Got to meet him yesterday, and I just said, hey, why don't you come on the show? And he's
jump
like, I'd be happy to. So
that's nice. We'll have him coming up at 10:20, or 10:35, rather. Goody at the Movies, AZ Central, and Gannett Chief Film Critic, Media Critic, Bill Goodykunz. I noticed Bill has been on this rant on Sean Hannity. But the only time I see Sean Hannity is at my mom's house, and she's 80-something, and it's turned all the way up. Like, you just got to hear what they're saying, because it's got to be true.
And Bill's phone will crap out because he's the only person I know who has a cell phone and just has the worst iPhone coverage ever.
He's been fine about the last 6-7 weeks. You're right. There's
False.
Usually that moment.
You must have forgotten last week when he dropped.
I wasn't here.
Recall him. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So last week was not good.
Was
train
Mun,
wreck,
yeah, Mun,
huh?
Mun was in there.
Well, that's Mun's
in
fault.
In the captain's chair.
It's not my fault. It's Mun's fault.
And Bill is also the only person I know that has he has to have like 3 different cell phones.
Well, that's true.
And the numbers, you know, I'll say, hey, is this the best number to reach on? No, I don't have that number anymore. Like, he has burner phones or something? I have no idea. I don't know.
He's one of those guys that goes to, like, Walmart where they have a little phone stand and you slide the card in, a phone pops out.
I just do what I'm told. I just try to follow directions and lead you and this company to success. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
It happens more often than not. Avengers comes out next week. And I don't think that Bill can give a spoiler, but evidently one of the main characters, I think it's Iron Man, who dies.
Oh.
Yeah, because Robert Downey Jr. said, I'm done doing these Iron Man things.
Well, that would make sense.
So I've heard that Iron Man dies, and Avengers is going to be gigantic. It will be ginormous. I don't know if I'm going to pull that out of Bill, if I'm going to extract that from him on today's segment.
I'm going to pull a Brad and say, I got invited to a screening to see Avengers because I really did, but unfortunately it's the same night as the NFL draft, and I thought you'd be upset if I told you, hey, I can't
the
draft. I need to go screen this movie.
Well, you're going to pull a Brad. What are you talking about? Does that mean that I bail out on things?
No, but you always say, I got invited to the screening, and I don't know. I guess I'm just
jealous.
Are
you butthurt?
Yeah, I used to get invited, but most of the screenings take place in Albuquerque out by your house, and I can't get to them. So it's like I could spend $17 in gas to get out there for a movie that pay $8 to see tomorrow.
Or they'll be
tomorrow.
On Netflix.
Or yeah, there you go.
The thing that Eric is not saying is when you go to these screenings, you have to sit all the way through them, even if it's dreadful, because they want to talk to you afterwards.
You
and yeah, it's just there's times where you're sitting there saying, I'm going to take this pen and I'm going to run it through my eyeball because I still have an hour and 45 minutes left. And I know the boat sinks at the end. It's Titanic. We got it. So on the sports end of things, last night, I was a heavy sports night. I'm usually not one that when the sun is out at 4:30 in the afternoon, that I am watching sports. I am usually on my bike, or I'm usually doing things with my son, or I'm doing a little bit of work, maybe in the office at 4:30 in the afternoon, but typically not. I work late at night. I work here in the morning. In the afternoon, I'll go out and do some sales work and keep the company afloat for another day or week or month or year. And it's 6.5 years of doing this. But yesterday, because the Cavaliers had lost game one, I felt as though the need to see, okay, if Cleveland bows out in the Eastern Conference, A, the broadcast executives are going to just jump off a bridge, one. B, LeBron, that's the way it's going to end in Cleveland, really? So I was caught up in watching almost every last minute. I actually pulled my 13-year-old in and said in fourth quarter, you need to watch this. And Eric, there was this moment yesterday that hit me as I'm sitting there with my son who's 13, and that is May 27th of 2010, knowing that's the last day the Suns had a playoff game. My son was five. So he has no concept or idea as a 13-year-old how big the NBA playoffs are. And for any kid, guys, okay, same with your kids. You're trying to get them interested in a sport, and they have no point of reference of what the playoffs are because the owner here has just not been committed to winning, for lack of a better term. It was really interesting for him because he was caught up in it. LeBron had 46. Kevin Love sprains a ligament in his finger. There was drama all over the place. And Cleveland wins by three. You know, I'm watching Indiana, and it's like Victor Oladipo. Victor Oladipo has been just a guy in the league. Thaddeus Young, just a long stretch body in the league. Nothing great, nothing spectacular, but here they are pushing Cleveland to the brink. And then the moment after the game happens. So during the middle of the Cavaliers game with the Pacers, TNT comes out. I think it was in the third quarter. And they released some breaking news. It was Ernie Johnson in the studio who came on very solemnly and said that Greg Popovich's wife had passed away. And Greg Popovich, of course, polarizing figure within the league. There's been all this stuff and drama around Kawhi Leonard. I think I mentioned earlier in the week, I don't understand why he keeps going after Kawhi Leonard. I heard an interview with Brian Windhorst, who's very good, who's been on the show, who said it was a bad look for Greg Popovich. I guess what none of us knew or know is that he was about to lose his wife. She'd been battling illness for quite some time. So Ali LaForce is doing the sideline reporting. Now, Ali LaForce, I think, does a good job. Ali LaForce is a solid reporter. I noticed that when the game ends, they cut to a shot of Ali talking to LeBron. But they're not on the air yet. It's still Marv Albert and Chris Webber. And then they cut to a couple shots of the crowd and all that stuff. And then they cut to the interview with Ali LaForce. Here, the interview. Okay, here's how this went down with Ali LaForce. So remember, Greg Popovich has been in LeBron's circle through the Olympics, through lots of things. So here's what happened. And this caused an enormous uproar last night and today.
I mean, I'm a huge Pop fan. I love Pop. That's such a tragedy, and you know, my best wishes goes out to Pop and his family. I know that's devastating news, and it's just a lot. I mean, the NBA family, we all stick together. I know we compete every night. But something like this happens, it puts everything in perspective. So, you know, I send my well wishes and my prayers up to the heavens above. I know the man above never makes a mistake, even when you sometimes have to ask why. But that's just terrible news. And best of luck to Pop, man, and everybody in San Antonio, the whole Spurs family.
All right. So Ali LaForce asks him about it. Now, in my mind, seeing the broadcast, being in the broadcast business and having been, I've done sidelines report before, and there are times where you will tell a subject, I don't like doing this. I don't like telling somebody, here's what I'm going to ask you. But I think in this case, and I don't know the exact terms of what went down, but Ali LaForce, clearly when they had the shot of her talking with LeBron and he's nodding and then they cut away from that, she's filling him in. Hey, I'm going to ask you about this. And so she asks him, and on social media, she gets absolutely, totally destroyed because LeBron's crying. And how could you make LeBron cry? So, you know, some of this sounds kind of dumb, I think, because contextually Popovich and LeBron are so close. You have to ask that question. So here's LeBron afterwards, while Ali LaForce is just getting destroyed nationally for asking him the question. Here's LeBron James after the game is over. He's on his way home.
Hey, what's up with y'all? Just checking in with y'all. You know, on my way home from our game 2 victory. And I'm not on social media right now, but I was made aware through some friends, through text, that a question was asked to me post-game, and a lot of people feel like I was blindsided. That is absolutely false. Ali LaForce told me that she was going to ask me the question and if it was okay. And once I started talking about it, once we were on air, actually my emotions just kind of took over, and that was just my emotions coming straight from my heart.
Okay, so he goes on for about 2 minutes on this. So we have to give context to this. While she's continually getting destroyed, LeBron goes out there. And even today, Ali LaForce has become this trending topic in our country because it's LeBron James. How could you do such a thing? You just saw him. And if you don't know the business, and she fills him in beforehand, and I've had people said, well, he was acting, he was all caught up and choked up, and he knew, and there comes a point where he just scored 46 freaking points. Last time I checked, LeBron James is still good. No matter how many of you don't want to believe that he's still good, I think he can still play a little bit. No matter how many don't want to give him credit for being a very, very talented basketball player and actually speaking out on issues and showing some emotion, it's not a bad thing. The rest of the playoffs last night, I'll get over the Diamondbacks in a minute because that was just dreadful. You know, Utah's sitting there, and this goes back to why our hometown heroes continually are just stuck in the mud. Donovan Mitchell, I've heard of Donovan McNabb. I've heard of Donovan Mitchell on draft night. Are there any other there's Ray Donovan. Eric, are there any other Donovans that jump in out of into your head? Donovan Mitchell's not one that would jump out on most people's minds. He was a mid-round, first-round pick. He's played as well as anybody. He had 28 last night for Utah. And Utah takes down Oklahoma City, which has, I don't know, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George. And here's this team that, by the way, the all-bad look team in the NBA playoffs is Utah with their unis. Just horrid. But at least they're there, unlike our guys here. So Utah wins. That series is tied up at a game apiece. Ricky Rubio was on the scrap heap in Minnesota, and he scored 22. And then the other game last night, James Harden went 2 for 18. 2 for 18. And Houston still just destroyed Minnesota because Minnesota's not ready for primetime yet. Karl Anthony Towns is going to be great. The rest of that team is very young. But the playoffs last night, to me, were fun. They were terrific to watch. I didn't think a sideline reporter needed to be the headline news today, but unfortunately it is. On the other side, they talk about right guy, right spot with the Diamondbacks. That was not the case last night for one player. I'll get into that, some baseball stuff. And then at about 10:35, Steve Weich from the NFL Network, their reporter analyst, he was with the Cardinals yesterday. Today he's in Oakland, goody at the movies too. It's a busy Thursday. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings per week. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, back after this timeout. Now let's turn our attention to the Diamondbacks. And, of course, everything going on here in the world of sports and on this show is brought to you by Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. You need life insurance. You've got to sit and look around the fruited plain and say, I got everything handled, Sussmat, or no, I don't. I've got obligations. I have people that are relying on me. If something were to happen to me today, what would happen to my estate? What would happen with everything? Log on to Sagicor Now. Get your free quote on life insurance. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. I'm going to talk a little bit about Pat Tillman here in a minute because we're not together until Monday. And the Tillman run is this week. And a couple other things around Pat that I want to work in on the show before we get to Steve Weich. So I'll make the Diamondbacks short. There's 162 of these bad boys. Last night was not good. Another way to put it. Alex Avila, or Avila, depending on how the pronunciation is, but I go by Avila, was not good last night. Twice they could have batted for him. He has not gotten off to a good start at the plate. He did not have a very good spring at the plate, but Alex Avila has been very good behind the plate. And so you have to weigh one with the other. I felt as though last night when he came up, I think it was the bottom of the eighth inning, and I'm watching the Diamondbacks game, and they're trying to get back into this. They've got a runner at third, and Alex just looks, and Berthume and Brenly's voices were kind of like, ugh, again. I could be wrong on that, but that's just how it sounded to me. So they end up losing in 10-4-3. Boxberger came in and served up a hamburger, and it got belted by Brandon Belt all the way out of the park. They talk about right guy, right spot with this team. I know Bob brought that saying up last night. And it was one of the few games that just left a bad taste in your mouth. You're going to lose of the 162. You're going to lose. I got it. It's going to happen. But last night's game was very winnable. And when you don't have that clutch hit, which this team has been known for this season, and it happens with the same guy twice, and then your closer who hasn't thrown in a while, and he's been a lot better than Fernando Rodney was last season. Fernando Rodney made money off of Prilosec. When he'd come out, you know, he'd have his gas can, his match lighter, and a ball and a glove. And we didn't know what was going to happen. But Boxberger, he's been really good until last night. So it was disappointing. They lost Taiwan Walker for the year. So if you weren't aware, Walker's gone. It means that they look at this organization or they look outwardly. I know on social media the last couple of days, the name of John Lackey has been floating around. I don't know if there is anything to that or not. That's a veteran name that's out there early in the season. Is there any connection with the Diamondbacks and getting John Lackey here? I've seen that, and we'll see. The Reds today fired a former Diamondback, Brian Price, 3-15. In Cincinnati, and they've gotten off to an awful start. Imagine living in Cincinnati where the Bengals are constantly in trouble, legally, it feels like. Vontaze is there getting thrown out, getting suspended, doing dumb things. And then the baseball team stinks. We're sitting here in Arizona just with two bad teams with the basketball team. I think the hockey team's getting better, but it's not as bad as, say, a city like Cincinnati. So there's that's going on the baseball side. Greinke throws tonight for $33 million after a loss. I would like to see him get on board. One other basketball thing before I get into Tillman. So Mike Budenholzer, why would Atlanta allow him to leave if they didn't think much of him? If the Suns really are going down the path of Mike Budenholzer, and it sounds as though they are, is Robert Sarver willing to part with a number one pick, not the number one overall pick, but a first round pick in exchange to bring a coach here? Does he believe that strongly in the coach? Is Mike Budenholzer looking at the Suns saying, well, I got to get over there. They've got this and they've got that and they've got all these resources and assets and they've got this owner over here who just hasn't quite figured it out, but I'm going to be the guy. Is Atlanta looking at it saying, we're in a rebuild, so we're going to fire Mike Budenholzer anyways next year or the year after because we're not going to be any good? So there's that side of it with the Suns and their coach. If he's not their coach by, I'd give him another week, then Robert swung and missed again. And you don't want to be the guy that swings and misses at Dan Marley. No, I'm not interested. Swings and misses at a guy like Budenholzer and then be left for all these guys that have just gotten fired elsewhere. That wouldn't make sense. Budenholzer would be a home run, really would be, for Robert Sarver. The Tillman run is this Sunday. If you're consuming this outside of Arizona, the impact of Pat Tillman is not one that you can be understated. It really can't. Pat Tillman is someone that I covered, that I did things for and stories around to help him raise money and funds. It's this Saturday. There's 28 satellite Tillman runs or shadow runs that they call them. This event started with just a couple of guys sitting at a BJ's brewery about a month after Pat was killed. And it spawned into something that they could sell 42,000 seats or spots, rather. They could sell 42,000 spots to run in this. I think they've capped it this year at like 30,000. This Saturday in Tempe will be big business for all the vendors, the airports, the hotels, people from around the country and around the world are now part of the Tillman Run. It's only 4.2 miles. This is not a Boston Marathon type of deal. But I think sometimes this event and the organizers of this event get overlooked. And there's been a lot of capitalization, in my opinion, on Pat's name. Things that popped up through the years, it's like, really? You're going to try to tie Tillman in on this too, which he would have hated. Somebody told me around the event, yeah, when we first sat down, we talked about a golf tournament, and Pat would have hated a golf tournament. That's not his deal. But a run, and you just call it Pat's Run. You keep it real simple. And now it's gotten to a point of pride, not just in Tempe, not just if you're an Arizona State alum or if you're an Arizona Cardinal fan, but just in general. And unfortunately, as Pat's life has gone away and the years have gone by, I don't know if people are as familiar with Pat Tillman. It's kind of like that last Sunday, which was Jackie Robinson Day. And everybody around Major League Baseball, all the players are wearing the number 42. And so to take the time to explain who was number 42, who Jackie Robinson was, and why is everybody wearing number 42, I think that's probably gotten lost out there. The same goes for Pat Tillman. What is Pat's Run? Who was Pat Tillman? What did he do? Those of us that are over the age of, 30, probably know Pat Tillman's story. But those of us under that age have no idea. So it's just something to kind of look at. If you're going to the Tillman Run, if you're involved in it, the anniversary is this Sunday. If you think it's something worthwhile to sit with your kids and just explain to them who he was, it's kind of like this. My seventh grade son came home and said, I want to do a story on John Wooden. Really? Yeah, Dad, you talked with him, didn't you? Yes, I've had him on my show before. He's great. Here's the Wooden Pyramid of Success. Here's a book about John Wooden so you can explain a little bit further. Maybe you do the same thing this weekend when it comes to Pat Tillman. We'll turn our attention to the NFL draft with Steve Wyche, NFL Network reporter and analyst. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. NFL draft now a week away. Steve Wyche, NFL Network reporter, analyst. He was at the Cardinals facility yesterday. Today he is in Oakland. Deeper dive into what the Cardinals may do at number 15 and some of the names surrounding the team. Steve is with us. You're in an Uber, it sounds like, right, Steve?
I was at the facility yesterday.
So you're in Oakland today. Let's start out with the Cardinals and your view right now. Where do they go with 15? Do they sit tight, or do you believe they're still trying to move up, Steve?
I do not believe they're trying to move up. And you know, Steve Keim kind of said it when he repeatedly mentioned mortgaging the future, or mortgaging the franchise to move up for the quarterback. Now, I believe they are going to draft a quarterback from people I spoke with. I just don't think it will be trying to move up from 15 into the top three. When you hear about mortgaging the franchise, look what the Rams did 2 years ago to get from 15 to 1, two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and I believe two third-round picks. Mm. With a team like Arizona, where you've got a lot of holes to fill, that is a tremendous amount of capital to give up to get the quarterback, especially if you're not moving up to number one, which they're not going to do.
If you stay at 15, if Arizona stays at 15, today, based on your conversation, what direction do you think they go?
Yeah, I think right now the initial thing to look at is probably corner or wide receiver. There's clearly an opportunity to get an offensive lineman there as well. You know, we hear guys like McGlinchey being mentioned. I think that's a possibility. But when you hear over and over from the building, length and speed are the two priorities of this draft. I think if there's a good corner, you look at Steve Wilks' background, it is on defense. Even though in Carolina they did not necessarily value cornerbacks at high picks. If there's one there that's at the top of their board, I think that's where they go. Wide receiver possibly, or O-lineman. I think those are probably the three positions you're looking at 15.
Steve Wyche with us, NFL Network reporter, analyst. He joins us. He's in Oakland today. He was at the Cardinal facility yesterday. What are your impressions of Wilks and Keim and how well they have worked together in the early going? And with draft day coming up, are they on the same page?
Well, I mean, everything seems like it's fantastic now, but it usually is, at this phase of a relationship. You've got a general manager who's hired a head coach, so this is his guy. Wilks, everything you hear from Carolina, people who've played for him, very much, as the media has seen, a serious guy, but a guy who gets it done. I mean, people respect him. They understand what he likes to do. So I think with him and Keim, Steve Keim is highly respected in the NFL. They seem to be on the same page. Everything seems to be simpatico. They respect each other. I think they respect each other's strengths. They're still learning each other, but I think they will definitely be in unison on this draft.
Quarterback has been an issue down here. Fans look at Sam Bradford and feel as though they tell me, Brad, we think he's just going to get hurt eventually, and Mike Glennon is here. They are going to take a quarterback from your view. It's just not going to be in the first round in this draft.
Yeah, unless somebody like Mayfield or Rosen slips to 12, or there's a trade activity in front of them that pushes somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then maybe the quarterback they like slips, and then maybe they move up. But otherwise, I think you're probably looking second or third round. I mean, a name you hear NFL circles that's popular when you get to the mid round is Lualeta, the quarterback out of Richmond,
mm-hmm.
Who played well in some bowl games. You know, they've got to start developing a quarterback. I mean, they have to do that. Bradford, you cannot rely upon. I speak to people up in Minnesota, and they said his knees are just not good. I mean, if you have Sam Bradford, you have him for a year.
Mm.
Mike Glennon, you know, the tape's not bad on him, but he's not somebody who I think is you know, going to usher you into the next era. And usually with new coaches, you see them attach themselves to a young quarterback. So I think second or third round is where you're looking at a quarterback, unless the players that they like better are position players in those rounds, or the quarterbacks that they like is not available in the second or third round.
Take me a little bit deeper on some of these quarterbacks in your reporting. Baker Mayfield was there yesterday. What is the true feel that you've been able to get from organizations, even the Cardinals, on Baker Mayfield?
Very, very, very positive. I mean, I've spoken to some teams in the top five who want him to be their quarterback.
Mm.
So I don't think he gets out of the top five. The big thing you hear about him is, you know, he's the guy who walks into your room and you immediately take to him. And that's not the case with all the guys in the room. Granted, quarterbacks, you know, it only takes one. It only takes one team or one coach or one GM to really feel what you could bring to that locker room. That's all that matters. But the one thing with Mayfield is universally, people you speak to, that's the first thing that comes out of their mouths. They like the fact that he's a gamer, that they can throw the ball. The height's an issue for some teams. The height's not an issue for other teams. But when push comes to shove, he's got that magnetism that, you know, a 23, 24-year-old kid can walk into a huddle with 30-year-old men and they can trust him right out of the gate. And that's a big thing for a lot of coaches, especially when they're trying to turn things around pretty quickly.
And the feel about Josh Rosen, is it just the opposite? Is it a mixed bag? While it's so positive about Mayfield, do we believe all of that? Or as Keim even alluded to yesterday, it's the misdirection season. What about Rosen?
There's a lot of misdirection. And usually, you know, when you find more negative things coming out about high picks, those are actually teams that like that player and they're trying to get people off of him. Josh Rosen is a good player. He is not for everybody. That's the way he plays. That's the scheme fit. And you can say the same thing about Mayfield when it comes to scheme fit and things like that. But his personality is not for everyone. And I think it's so amusing each year when we dissect quarterbacks, like, this guy's kind of dull, or this guy, he can't fit into every schematic system. And this guy's being judged for being too intellectual, which I would much rather have, you know, a knowledge-thirsty player who may overanalyze things a little bit than having to limit my playbook and to limit what other people in the huddle might be able to do because a guy can't grasp onto things. But,
sure.
Yeah, it's odd, but Josh Rosen clearly is not the flavor of the day for some teams.
But, you know, Lamar Jackson's name, Steve, has been linked to the Cardinals quite a bit at 15. Based on our conversation at the front of this interview, it sounds like that's not going to be the case. But let's just say he is sitting there.
Sitting there at 15?
Yeah, if he's sitting there at 15, they pass him?
Yeah, I don't think they take him at 15. I would be very surprised if he's there at 15. Now, that would be – we're talking about misinformation, this and that. But I would be surprised if he is their guy at 15.
Hmm. Interesting. You leave Arizona. What's your takeaway from being down here, just big picture as to what they're trying to do and where they are in the NFC West, where there's been so much movement of players moving in and out, front office coaches? What's your view of where Arizona is right now?
Yeah, they're kind of in, I won't say purgatory, but it's just an interesting spot because of the quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see the 49ers have a young quarterback to build around.
Yep.
Seattle has Russell Wilson, even though they've got a lot of other issues going on. And the Rams have Jared Goff. Cardinals have Sam Bradford. I mean, that is not a long-term answer. That's not the guy you build around. So they're clearly trying to stay competitive. They're trying to put pieces in place so when they do get their young quarterback they want to build around, he doesn't have to work as hard. Other than David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald to some degree and Patrick Peterson, the Cardinals lack playmakers. You know, Chandler Jones is a playmaker. I won't say he and Marcus Golden are playmakers. But they've got to get some explosiveness if they want to compete in this division. So I think when you look at things, you talk to people around the league, Arizona is one of those teams where, you know, they're just people are looking more at mediocrity, being competitive, being a team that you don't want to play, but a team that clearly has got somewhat of an identity crisis in terms of what they are and what they're going to be, and that's where Steve Wilks has to come in and establish a type of identity on both sides of the football, what the Arizona Cardinals will be this season and what they will become.
Good stuff there. I'll let you get to your Raiders story today, Steve. Thanks for the time and the visit.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
You got it there, Steve Wyche there, NFL Network reporter, analyst. Good stuff. Deep dive there. All right. I like that. Goody at the movies on the other side. AZ Central and Gannett, chief film and media critic. He's got three movies, and he bangs away on Sean Hannity. We'll have that on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, we want to get you ready for the weekend and media stuff, too. It is time for Goody at the Movies. Bill Goodykunz, AZ Central and Gannett, chief film and media critic. So, Avengers comes out next week. You have not seen it yet, correct?
Correct.
I am hearing from my sources, my kids, that a main comic character dies early in the movie. Have you read any of this? I am guessing it's Iron Man because Robert Downey Jr. does not want to keep being Iron Man. We can speculate on this because we're not giving it away. Do you hear any of this? And would that make sense? It's Iron Man. It's got the Sussmat household more strung out than Sean Hannity. So
I don't know. I have not read it. And I mean, I've heard stuff that maybe a bunch of them are going to die. I don't know. And honestly, at this point, this is like the 18th movie or something like that, in 10 years. It wouldn't surprise me, although I think if I were Robert Downey, that may be a payday too good to turn down. Now, you don't have to make another Iron Man movie, but you can show up for 5 minutes in the Ant-Man movie or whatever.
Like, that's true.
Make more than you and I will in our whole lives. But, you know, and people, by the way, when they die in these things, don't necessarily die forever.
That's right.
I think that they're finally going to have to, I mean, supposedly, and I am not as versed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as they call it, as everybody else is, even though I think I've seen all the movies, but I don't get into the minutiae, you know, the same way other people do. I don't care, you know, really where Thor's hammer came from, although I know, but if it's all been leading up to this, and one of the complaints that people have had about these films is that, you know, that they always, the climax of all these films is this gigantic, you know, chaotic, incoherent fight between, you know, aliens and superheroes and bad guys and good guys. And none of the good guys ever get hurt or ever get killed. And they get sad and, you know, Enterprises have to be rebuilt. But nobody ever gets killed. It's, you know, no harm, no foul. And it would make sense, I guess, if it's been leading to this, to kill somebody.
Wipe them all out. And then, get rid of all of them. Just wipe them out. The end.
I don't think that's going to... I know for a fact that at least Black Panther is going to survive because they've already... Actually, there's a whole bunch of these movies already slated anyway. So you can probably go through IMDb and see what movies they've already committed to.
Right. Wonder Woman, check. Aquaman, gone. Okay.
You know, that is...
All right, so let's go over here to some of the movies. Now we'll get into Sean Hannity because I don't want to leave any meat on the bone with you. I Feel Pretty, okay? I Feel Pretty. Is this any good?
No, not really, and it's a shame because Amy Schumer is really funny and she's really sort of courageous. And this is a movie where she plays a woman who has all these sort of body issues and thinks she's ugly and you know, not supermodel thin and all this stuff. And these are things that Amy Schumer has talked about before in her comedy and in her skits and stuff. And you think this would be – what happens is this woman hits her head and becomes convinced – I mean, nothing changes, but she's convinced she's a supermodel, that she's just, like, drop-dead gorgeous. And she sort of all of a sudden has all this confidence, and, you know, when you have confidence, things tend to go well for you or better than they did. And, you know, so that sounds like something where Amy Schumer could really – that's like her wheelhouse, you know. But it turns out that, and she did not write this movie, by the way. She wrote Trainwreck, which is her best movie so far. But she enjoys being beautiful too much. It kind of undercuts everything that they're trying to do in the movie and everything that they're trying to say. And I thought it was disappointing. I thought that there was a real chance for her to do some good stuff here, and it left me kind of cold.
Yeah, and she's been everywhere over the last few weeks. So okay, so I Feel Pretty, kind of a meh. Super Troopers 2. This is the title of this. Sounds like not good. Am I right or am I wrong?
It's horrible, but it doesn't matter because people who like this love it. There's a movie in 2001 called Super Troopers, right? And it did okay. It's just really stupid. It's these basically stoner state troopers who care more about getting high than solving crimes. They're idiots, but it's funny. I mean, it's just sort of a throwback to like the 80s dopey comedies. You know, take that two ways, dopey comedies. But they made this thing, and it wasn't a huge hit in the theaters, but where it really took off was that was when DVD players became really prevalent in people's homes, and it did huge business on DVD. And so it became this cult hit. Well, what happened in the last few years is people wanted a sequel, so they said, look, we can't, you know, no studio is going to do this. But if you'll crowdsource it, we can make it. And it was one of the most successful crowdsourced things in history. I think they made more than $2 million.
Wow.
Just from fans. And they had the screening that they had for this thing. Here's everything you need to know about this. I was at the screening for this, and the actors and director, who's one of the actors, came. You know, they did one of those little flybys where they come in and wave, you know, and say hi. And people, you know, people, fans holler at them and stuff. And they said, we just want to thank everybody so much for, you know, for the money. It's really been great. It's really gratifying and all this stuff. And they're not as stupid in real life as they are in the movie, by the way. And they're actually quite smart. They met in college. I think they went to, like, Colgate or somewhere. But and everybody cheered. And they said, well, don't cheer yet. You don't know if it's any good or not. And somebody from the crowd yelled, it wouldn't matter. It's like, that's exactly it. That's who this movie is for. If you like these guys, you're going to love this thing. And if you don't, you're going to wonder what the fuss is over.
Yeah. All right. So that's intriguing. I like that. Okay, the final one is The Final Portrait. The Final Portrait. Is this any good?
Yeah, it's good. It's about it's sort of about the artistic process and what it's like. But Jeffrey Rush plays this painter, whose name I cannot recall, but he's a genuine famous guy, you know. And he had a friend who's a writer who became his biographer, and he said, and this is in 64 in Paris, and he says, hey, you know, will you sit down and I'll do a portrait of you? And the guy says, sure. And he says, it'll take a couple of days. And of course, over like 2 weeks later, it's still not done. And didn't appear that it's ever going to get done. And it's Jeffrey Rush is who won an Oscar for playing what I guess Glenn Gould, wasn't it? Is it in China? Is that who's in, but,
it sounds right.
He's really good at playing these sort of tortured geniuses, and he's really good in this. And so that's sort of interesting. And it's also interesting, I mean, this really happened, and the guy never really did finish it, and he finally just took it. And the thing ended up being worth $20 million or something. You know? He didn't do it necessarily for the money, although I think, you know, writers typically, even successful ones, don't make $20 million too often, so that probably wasn't too bad. But it's interesting. And Armie Hammer plays the writer, and he's... But all he really does, and you know, is sit there and get his picture painted.
That's it. So of the three, which one would you say go see this weekend? Very diverse, well, Bill. Very diverse.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I don't know. I would say of those three, probably Final Portrait, although even though I think it sort of fails, I feel pretty is a sort of an interesting failure. I'll tell you what's really good in I Feel Pretty is Michelle Williams plays the sort of heiress to this really snotty makeup company, and she is fantastic. That's the other problem. This is Amy Schumer's about the third or fourth most interesting character in the movie.
Okay, so all right. So I Feel Pretty maybe too. All right, so before you get out of here, Sean Hannity. So you just take off on Sean Hannity this week. I am in that space in life where if I go over to my mother's house in Chandler and it's 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whenever a show comes on, I can hear it all the way down the street. She has it turned up so loud. and whatever is said has got to be God's truth. And then she's the no offense to my mom. I don't know where this comes from. Like, why do you watch this stuff? So why'd you take off on poor Sean this week, Bill?
Well, poor Sean turns out to have a humongous conflict of interest that he never alluded to on the air. There, you know, when Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, he had these clients, and he was being called into court because Trump's people wanted to delay some stuff and look at some stuff. And he had this mystery third client, and nobody knew who it was. And so it turns out in open court, they say it's Sean Hannity. This is the Sean Hannity who has defended Michael Cohen and who, to the death. I mean, and the thing with Sean, as you know, with Sean Hannity is defending someone is not enough. You have to trash anybody even remotely associated with anything on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's just a bully. He bugs me. But he also made $36 million last year. So there's a lot of people like your mom out there that are – and, of course, I've gotten just ripped apart by people who love him and said, yeah, you don't know, that's real news. Who cares if he didn't – and that's the thing. That really is the thing. I think one of the things I wrote is Trump famously said, I could shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and not lose a vote. And what we're finding out is, can Sean Hannity do the journalistic equivalent of that and not lose a viewer? And it looks like that's probably what's going to happen. Fox News, by the way – who didn't even know about this relationship, the next day comes out with a statement of like, well, why we didn't know about it, we're not going to do anything. We talked to him. We're fine,
Yeah.
And so that's just, I mean, that's who you're dealing with when you're dealing with Fox News. They need to change the second word in their name.
Yeah. It's interesting just to see you go off on somebody like that, because you have an art about you where you can take the cleaver and slowly get rid of, or in a hurry, get rid of something, a finger, an arm. But you went Black Knight on this one, legs and arms. So, which was good. Which was good.
I honestly think, some of the feedback I got, and there are a lot of people, by the way, who I've heard say that their parents are really like this stuff. But a lot of what I've heard is that, why does this matter? Why is it important? And the reason it's important is because Hannity is hugely popular, and people actually listen to what he says. He really does influence people. And one of those people is Donald Trump. And I mean, so I think that's why it's important.
I'll let you go off that. Good stuff. Thank you. I'll see you at Avengers, maybe, possibly, somewhere. Bye.
Okay.
There's Goody at the movies. Steve Weich was really good today. Goody was great as always. Billy Donovan. That was my friend Steve sent me a text about Billy Donovan. We left out that Donovan, too, when we were talking about Donovans earlier. Eric Sorensen is always the Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing with this company, depending on the day. And Jared Nielsen is the Iron Man Chairman of the Board. Have yourself a great Thursday.